This is the Hollywood Outsider After Dark, our alternative podcast where we hose let our hair down, slip into something a little more comfortable, and talk about geek stuff that doesn't fit in the usual ho episode. Our regular episodes will air on Thursdays as always, which you can find on iTunes, Stitcher, or through our website at thehollywoodoutsider.com. My name is Justin McCummer with me as usual. First off, we have got the Ben Affleck to my... Oh, fuck, I forgot his name. Bruce Willis. Aaron, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm okay with being Ben Affleck, man. That dude is pumped.
Well,
and Bruce Willis is kind of a has-been, so it does fit. Yeah, I like it.
You do so much work on the show. I felt like I had to give you the good one. And here's the Steve Buscemi to my, as well, Bruce Willis. Brian, how are you doing?
Wow.
Yes, I was hoping for that one. I'm good.
You should be a little ashamed of yourself.
Excellent. This week, as you may or may not know, we are going to be talking about Michael Bay. This episode, it should be titled The People versus Michael Bay. We want to have a discussion about his merits as a filmmaker, what he's brought to movies, especially to modern summer blockbusters. The man is attacked, it seems like, on all sides, fans, critics, everyone saying that he's the shittiest filmmaker, the Nickelback of Hollywood directors, and yet his movies make bank.
Yeah,
this morning I did a little research. Do you guys know how much money his movies have made so far? And these are just his directed movies. I'm not talking about the movies under his Platinum Dunes and under Shingles. Just the movies he's directed.
I think it's about $2 billion. Like,
no.
Whoa. No?
Worldwide.
Okay.
Worldwide, non-adjusted, $5.1 billion. The Transformers movies alone are so far up to about $3 billion worldwide.
I thought you meant domestic. I'm sorry. You should have clarified because it is $2 billion domestic. I'm just saying.
It probably is. But when I want to talk about a director's ability to generate revenue, we have to go worldwide. I think as Americans, our narrow perception of, you know, domestic versus worldwide, we need to break free of that domestic issue because those international markets are making up more and more and more of the money.
Fuck that. This is America. We're number one.
Not anymore.
This is the July 4th weekend, so all right, yeah. Fuck the rest of the world. America!
Yeah.
America! Woo-hoo!
But people are going to listen to this probably on Monday, so world! There you go. You're right.
Either way, the guy has made a huge amount of money for Hollywood, yet he is one of the most reviled directors working. And so today we're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about the things we like, things that maybe we don't like, how, you know, what our feelings are in regards to his impact, those sorts of things. So if you're ready for that kind of discussion, get a box of popcorn or a bucket, whichever you prefer, your beverage of choice, and sit back as we start talking.
Mm-hmm. Blow some shit up. That's
blow
what Michael Bay
some
would do.
Shit up audio wise. Aaron, if you could drop in little explosions just randomly.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's going to happen.
Maybe that'll help answer that. That's right. Now let's go ahead and just jump right into it. Before we talk about specific films, we're going to talk a little more general. Let's talk about what makes a movie blockbuster Bayhem. Now that's a word that people have coined to describe Michael Bay movies. To you, what is a major component of a blockbuster? What is it that makes you want to go into a theater to see a film? And if you could talk about not just films and just of Michael Bay, but in general, but let's make sure we do get Bay in there as well. But Aaron, what is it a blockbuster to you?
Well, to me, a blockbuster is a little different than your average movie. And, you know, it's not to say that we don't like smart movies or we don't like deep films. But a lot of times for a blockbuster, it's like Brian always says, the pretty pictures. It's the special effects. It's, I'm going to spend $10, go with my friends. Sometimes you just want to turn your brain off and go and have fun. You know, I want major set pieces. I would like action. I want something to move fast. And I want humor involved as well. Now, that's not everything. You know, there's smart blockbusters as well. Edge of Tomorrow. But sometimes I don't want to have to think. I just want to have fun. And for me, the major component of a blockbuster would be fun. As long as the movie's fun, doesn't have to be smart, doesn't have to be deep, doesn't have to have wonderful character depth. It just has to be fun. That's my answer.
Okay. What about you, Brian?
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, really a lot of the same stuff. One thing with a blockbuster is you want to, at least I want to see, I guess, something I haven't seen before. I want to see something grand. That was speaking of this weekend, Independence Day. That was, at the time, huge. You're blowing up the White House. You're blowing up cities, and you've never seen up until that point something of that scale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's with the detail and everything, and not that you can't do that unless you're doing it's a huge special effects budget. So that's really the fun is a major component of that. It's just action. I am very, and I've said this 100 times before, but I'm very shallow when it comes to movies like Michael Bay's, and that's just something I expect. I just accept is that, yeah, I will trim off some of the deep story and the emotional attachment and character arcs and that kind of stuff for, hey, pretty pictures, a lot of stuff blowing up, a lot of fun, some humor, and just make it a fun ride. And it stands out from every other movie that's in the theater. It just is. It's just bigger.
Sometimes it's okay to sacrifice. You know, I mean, I think people get caught up on this, that every movie has to be a genius script. And I just don't agree with that. I've never agreed with that. I don't understand why people sometimes feel that way.
Well, we'll get into that more in a moment, but I want to kind of bring this back around to Bay. The things you guys described as a blockbuster describe quite a bit of what Michael Bay does, but
yeah.
What is it about Michael Bay's films specifically that you think maybe elevates him above your average? And to say average blockbuster sounds kind of strange, but I do think that his films stand out from, you know, your Roland Emmerich kind of movies, or maybe your Justin Lin movies. What is it about him that you like and that you think he adds to the summer movie season?
For me, he absolutely remembers that humor has a place. To me, that's a huge one. You know, so many, especially these days, big budget action flicks try so hard to be serious because they're trying to be smarter than they really are, I think. He always seems to remember, I need a joke. It doesn't always work. You know, something like Revenge of the Fallen, those stupid, you know, racist robots, that wasn't a good point. But a lot of times, even in his serious films or where he's trying to be serious, he always remembers to interject humor. And to me, that's what rises him above. Roland Emmerich tries, but his jokes are awful. Like, he does the racist robots in every movie. And it's what it feels like. Where I think Michael Bay, more often than not, hits the humor mark, which keeps a movie fun. So in between the bombastic action and the noise and the score and the loud drums and everything else, you've got something to be entertained by, as opposed to, I'm just waiting for the next set piece.
Along with that, I think it's the visual style that he brings. You see a lot of other directors copying it, but it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that they pull off the same effect. Honestly, one of the little things that, it's a minor detail, but it pops up in everything, is his obvious patriotism. You always see some Americana. For whatever reason, you don't see that in any other movie.
That's true. You see the flag or something, yeah.
It's kind of funny. It's almost, because he started doing commercials and music videos, and there was one of his Meatloaf videos he did earlier. I actually had a Robert Patrick in it, and little airplanes and you see the American flag, and it's almost like he takes that scene and puts it in every one of his movies. and in a way, to me, I kind of chuckle at it, but also kind of go like, okay, all right, just that's enough. But anyway, before I get too far sidetracked, I just think that between that and the way he just cuts everything so fast, you're it's almost like your brain is playing catch up the whole time there's an action scene going on. Just nobody else does it like him. He knows what America, or let's just say, he knows what the viewing public wants. It's obviously not just America. It is a worldwide thing because, like you say, I mean, what is it, $5 billion worldwide?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he knows what the collective we like. And he does everything he can to bring it. And he also steps up his game every single movie. And for almost 20 years now, that's pretty hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple things I would add. I think what I really enjoy about Michael Bay's films is that he loves to put all of us right in the middle of the chaos. when it comes to explosions and things moving around the screen, he always is like right in the middle of it. You're face to face with all of this danger. It's circling around you, and it's sometimes even literally when he does those camera tricks of spinning around, you know, through one door, around the bad guys, like in Bad Boys 2, around the bad guys, through another door, around our heroes, and he does it a few times. Or he's throwing cars and boats and stuff.
And dead bodies.
You know? And dead bodies off the backs of trucks. He throws them right in your face, so that camera is always right there. It's never a far remove where you're feeling safe as an audience member. He puts you right in it, and I love that. It's to go along with something you mentioned, Brian, or Aaron first. It's not so much his patriotism that gets me. It's the relationship that he has developed with the military. And I would imagine that some of that was helped by Jerry Bruckheimer. You know, Bruckheimer, through his movies with Tony Scott and some others, he developed a really good relationship with the military. And Michael Bay, you know, a lot of people call his movies like military porn. Mm-hmm. Because you do get those loving shots of all of those aircraft carriers or other boats, or, you know, the big planes and the jets and the troops. The military knows that he's going to make them look really good and really sexy. And so they don't mind letting him use their equipment in their movies. They don't mind that their people are working as, you know, extras in the film. Usually, you know, one of these movies where you see a bunch of guys in a, say, in one of those giant planes that's about to start shelling an area, those people that are talking really fast using all that military jargon, a lot of time those are real guys. In fact, they may be the guys working on that plane. But that's what the military, you know, they love when he comes a-calling, you know, as opposed to like when Joss Whedon wanted to do The Avengers and wanted to do some real filming on a real aircraft carrier, they didn't let him. You know, they felt like the movie didn't represent the military, the United States military, in the way they want it, so they said no. But Michael Bay gets it, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I like the realism, the verisimilitude that being on an actual working aircraft carrier or plane or tank gives to a movie. And so I like that. I like it quite a bit. But Michael Bay is seen as someone who sacrifices story, you know, in favor of flash and explosions and sizzles. Do you agree with that? And furthermore, if you do, or even if you don't, do you think it's okay that a weak story is left weak so that the effects, action, and everything else are there to bring things up? Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if he necessarily sacrifices story. I think when he focuses maybe more on the story, we get a movie like Pearl Harbor, which
we'll get there.
To me was enjoyable. It was too much of a love story for me. But overall, the action sequences and everything, and the visual shots that you've never seen before. Or like the bomb that you see, that you follow all the way down,
mm-hmm.
was just absolutely phenomenal. So it just all goes back to, I assume there's going to be certain, for like, you know, I'll just use your word, sacrifices, when it comes to his movies. And I'm fine with that. I know when I go see a Michael Bay movie, I'm not expecting to be moved to have a life-altering experience. So I know that this is what I'm going for. Now, if that was to happen, all of a sudden there's some emotional touching that hits me, then that's great. Armageddon was a great example of that with Harry Stamper and his daughter. Mm-hmm. You felt really connected with him. I don't necessarily, I'm thankful that I didn't feel emotionally connected to Shia LaBeouf in the Transformers movies. I just don't like him.
I like him in those movies.
So I just, but he was, but he fit the character, and I to a certain extent cared about his, about the character and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't, my motivation for seeing that was to see the Transformers, not to be
moved.
Not to be moved.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely think he sacrifices story sometimes. I do believe that. I think he goes more for the sizzle and the flash and, man, look at that shot. I think Michael Bay, when he's got the script and the camera in hand, he always picks the camera. He's always looking for the best angle, the best shot. And that's what makes him a fun director to watch. Now, people can lambast him all they want and they can criticize him and everything else, but people love his movies. Like you said, $5 billion. People love what they're getting. Whether they are happy with the product or not, he produces something that people want to see. And it's a mixture of those things. And I have felt during his movies, I think that's not fair to say that people don't have an emotional attachment. In Armageddon, who didn't tear up when Harry Stamper died? Who didn't? Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. Who didn't well up? And if you watch The Rock, if you've never seen The Rock, and they have the standoff between Ed Harris and Michael Biehn in the underground bunker or whatever of Alcatraz, and he's like, I will not give that order. Oh, I will not. Who does not well up and like sit there and want to fucking salute?
You spilled the same blood and the same mud.
That's right. Who doesn't feel that way? So that, yes, do his movies sometimes sacrifice story? Absolutely. But does that make them less story driven? I would disagree with that. I always follow the story. I can always keep up. It's simple. It's more simple. I prefer that for his films because a lot of them are just meant to be fun. They're not meant to be Oscar winners. They're not.
It's a ride.
Yeah, it's a ride. Exactly. It's a theme park. You go to a roller coaster. I don't want to hear about your story development, your character development while I'm going up. I just want to know I'm going up and soon I'm going to be let go and go crazy. That's what I want.
Don't teach me history or economics or anything like that or social issues while I'm riding loop-de-loops on a freaking roller coaster. That's not what I'm there for.
Well, and it really, it irritates me when the movie intelligentsia, the hipsters who think that they're going to be the arbiters of what is good and what is not. It really irritates me when they use the phrase turning off your brain as though that is a negative or it's somehow a diminishing aspect of his films. And I totally disagree with that. I think that within filmdom, there is more than enough room for all types of movies. There's room for your really emotionally impacting movies, your very thoughtful movies. And then there's room for just, and I don't say it in a bad way, but just kind of dumb explosion spectacles. Why is that suddenly a bad thing? I mean, we all like to go out on the 4th of July and just watch fireworks explode. We don't need Benedict Cumberbatch narrating a story behind that, do we?
No,
we just want to see shit fly into the sky and then blow up and go ooh and ah and then go home. That's fine.
Now,
and
now that you mention it, that would kind of sound pretty awesome.
Someone him reading the Declaration of Independence.
Oh yeah. Slow motion. He's panning. He's doing several shots around the country as people gather. Oh yeah, definitely.
Dang it, man. That's a good idea.
Well, and what kind of reminds me, and this is almost something that Michael Bay could have done. Have you guys seen, and I know you have, Aaron, but Brian, did you see the video of that drone?
A drone,
that
yeah.
Someone flew through all those fireworks. That's almost something Bay would do.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is.
But the thing is that there is room for all of these kinds of films. So why a certain segment of the viewing public has decided that if a movie doesn't have just the greatest story ever written or the best characters ever developed, that it suddenly just doesn't count. It pisses me off. And I stop listening to those kinds of critics. If you don't have room for that in your life, well, then I think you're lacking. You're lacking something in your soul.
And I want to point something out. I was actually thinking about this. I was trying to find something where I can compare the two and say, this is how hypocritical you sons of bitches are. If you go look at Pacific Rim, right? Which, you know, we all like.
Which
liked
I watched last night.
Yes. And you obviously love more than life itself. But, a lot of that got great reviews. Hipsters love it. They think it's great. Da 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 da. But you watch that and you tell me exactly what is so different between that movie and a Transformers movie. Because I couldn't tell you what's so different. It's not a deeper story. If you tell me it's a deeper story, I'll tell you how full of shit you are. It's about giant monsters and giant robots. Transformers is about giant robots based on a kid's toy. How is that any deeper? How is Pacific Rim any deeper?
Well, and people wanted to
came from the bottom. They came from the bottom of the ocean. That's pretty deep.
Well, there you go.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, touche.
Yeah, but people who loved Godzilla want to say that that's somehow, you know, a better movie than maybe what Michael Bay could do. But I don't know. For me, Godzilla was a film that had very little humor in it, very little character development in it, and the story was just kind of mediocre. For me, something like Godzilla, at least a Michael Bay movie, is got all the action, the drama, the explosions to keep me entertained in those, you know, throughout the running time. Mm-hmm. Godzilla didn't. It had about a really cool final act, and that was it.
Well, and then, what about the other genre movies that get so much, you know, acclaim? Ted, how much fucking story development and character arcs are there in that movie? I mean, it just seems like it's an excuse just to hate whenever they'll turn around and I say they, whether it's critics or hipsters or just plumb assholes, it's just a convenient excuse. Oh, there's no story here. Well, 90% of the movies, if you wait to only watch a movie that's got a deep story and extreme, you know, and great character developments and deeper meanings on it, so you'll go to the movies probably 3 times a year.
I would agree with that. Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter what genre. It doesn't matter if it's action, if it's comedy, if it's romance, any subgenre in under those umbrellas, you're only going to go see maybe 2 or 3 movies a year at the most.
And that's absolutely true. And you know what? There are hipsters listening right now. Like, that's bullshit. I'm like, no, it's true, man. It's true. Half the movies you're going to name to refute and say how horrible director Michael Bay is, I guarantee you are not much deeper than anything he's done. If they're deeper at all, if they're not just equally as basic as his story. You know, most action films are pretty basic. Even your superhero stories are not that deep.
Well, right. If you look at something like The Avengers or Captain America, The Winter Soldier, there would be some people who would say, well, those movies are full of special effects and explosions, but they also have pretty good stories and really good character arcs. So why can't Bay do it? To that, I say, I don't fucking want Michael Bay doing that. I actually don't want a deep, thoughtful Transformers movie.
Mm-mm.
Because that ain't what the Transformers are fucking about. They're films based on a cartoon that was based on toys. They were meant to sell toys. Transformers they were never cerebral storytelling devices. And so I don't need those films to be any better or different than the cartoons were. I just want robots beating up robots. And that's what he does. Now, I do think that as time has gone on, he's gotten a bit indulgent with his running times.
Yeah, a little bit. A little Peter Jackson-esque.
Yeah, but even then, at least I'm getting, you know, more of what I want as opposed to less of what I want. I don't want thoughtful Bay. I really don't. I want to just sit back and be, you know, drowned in explosions and fire. That's all I want. And if that makes me a bad person, then I don't want to be good.
Maybe it makes them a bad person. You know, why should we be ashamed or embarrassed that we enjoy something that obviously millions of other people, that doesn't make us less smart. It means that we actually are more well-rounded. It sounds to me like you're a small-minded person if you can't enjoy them just because Michael Bay directed it. You know, I swear if you slapped Del Toro's name on it or Peter Jackson's name on any of his movies, then suddenly people like them better. And that makes
Roberto
no sense.
Orsi or yeah. Alex Kurtzman.
Or J.J. Abrams.
If you said it was J.J. Abrams directed Transformers, it would suddenly have a tomato rating of like 80%.
Yeah. And you know what? If you go look at J.J. Abrams' movies, not much different. Really not. There, some of his visual style is very similar to Michael Bay's. It really is.
And out of weird unintended coincidence, Kurtzman and Orsi actually wrote The Island.
And they wrote the first Transformers movie.
So there you go.
Oh, cool.
So there you go. Now, there is a pretty wide gulf. I was looking at the Rotten Tomato ratings for his films, the critics versus audience. And it seems that on the average, there is about a good 30 to 40% difference, usually with the audience liking it much more than the critics did. I mean, Bad Boys got 43% with critics, whereas the audience got 79%. The highest Rotten Tomato rating, tomato meter, whatever that phrase is, he got was for The Rock. And he got 67%, whereas the audience was 86%. Now, the Transformers movie started off high with the audience at 86, but the second and the third went down into the high 50s, yet each of them earned more than the one before it. Mm-hmm. You could probably explain some of those dollars with, you know, an increase because of 3D or an IMAX screen showing, but that's not going to account for everything. So I do find it odd that as fewer people like the movies or say, or at least go to Rotten Tomatoes to put their vote in, they keep making more and more money.
How would that, and just to propose a theory, how much of that do you think is from, you know, the original movie, people were, you had more positive people going to Rotten Tomatoes. And as the culture has gotten more and more cynical over the last 5-10 years, that is where you've seen it diminish because they constantly just gang up on Michael. I mean, honestly, I have seen no director be ganged up on like he has. None.
Maybe Uwe Boll.
Yeah, but he still makes movies.
But I think he also tries for that.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's not trying too hard.
But I think that's the only director I think probably more despised than Michael Bay. That's true. But yeah, with Michael Bay films, there are certain cliches. We've kind of mentioned a few of them earlier. I mean, the whole slow-mo action as the camera pans up from the ground, looking up at our heroes. You know, that is a signature Michael Bay shot. What do you think are some of his other cliches? And do you like them or have they grown tiresome? What do you think, Aaron?
I love the sexed up girl that he always has to have in every movie. I mean,
yeah. It's barely legal.
Barely legal. Yeah. Sometimes I feel uncomfortable. Most times I don't. I always like that. That's a fine one. You know what? I think how he cuts his films, you know, for a lot of directors that try the style that he does, the quick cut, a lot of them make it so you can't understand the action. Where I think the cliche of a Michael Bay film is he cuts it quick and you still understand what's going on. To me, I consider that a Michael Bay film. Like, I can see that and say, that's Michael Bay. I can tell his work because he can cut quick and I still know what's going on. But yeah, the slow motion from the ground up, I mean, where the hero's shirt's flowing in the wind because obviously he needed to unbutton it while he ran. And
Will Smith knows you got to unbutton that shirt. Otherwise, you lose some of your aerodynamics.
Absolutely. And every time you mentioned the Avengers a couple times. Every time I watch that and they do the slow motion around all the heroes,
yeah,
that's a Michael Bay shot. Yeah. That's a Michael Bay shot. If anybody ever, like, he should just trademark that, put a stamp on it. And every time they show that somewhere, they should just say directed by Michael Bay. Because honestly,
they should have just put in one frame of Michael Bay's face in the middle of that pan around.
They should have like just brought him over there and had him stand next to him.
Or he could have like photobombed from the back. Hey!
But that and the explosions. I mean, the explosions are trademark, Michael. You know, what do you guys think about that? You're talking about cliches. Everybody brings up the explosion. I mean, when they talk about Michael Bay, you go on YouTube, look, you know, put in Michael Bay and you'll see videos of people just putting explosions in. Do you think he overdoes it, or does he do it the right amount?
I think he does it the perfect right amount.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I don't. It's not a distraction to me at all. It fits fine. Now, granted, you know, what was it? Was it Bad Boys 2 where they're driving through the slums in the Hummer?
Kind of like that. Yeah, the Cuban favela.
Yeah.
Yeah. That there might have been one or two explosions in that. That was a little bit over the top, but other than that,
how many poor innocent Cubans just got blown to shit?
Yeah. Oh man. So, yeah, but again, you throw in, just say Pearl Harbor. I mean, there's so much going on with that it really all the explosions really kind of help give you an idea of what it might have been like to be there. I mean, yeah. For years, you think about it, all we heard about was, well, you know, Pearl Harbor was bombed. But to see the people on, whether it's the airport, you know, the military airport, the runways, whether it's on the ship or in town, and all of a sudden there's all this chaos, frantic, just action going on. It really gives you kind of an idea of what it's like to be there. Obviously, it's not the real thing, but you know, it lends to, I think most of the time it lends to whatever's going on. And I think he does it. I think he does it very well. I don't think anybody else does it like him. And I think he's the tip of the iceberg when it comes to that.
Well, hearing you talk about that, it kind of makes me wonder how much different would the beginning of Saving Private Ryan have been
if Bay had
directed it instead of Spielberg.
Oh, wow. Just think of the end battle. I mean, Tom Hanks would have blown up good. Oh, yeah. He wouldn't have gone out quietly like he did. No. He would have had a grenade, ran into battle, and blown the shit out of the entire bridge. That's how Michael Bay would have done it.
He'd have taken out the Nazi single-handedly.
I like his explosions. I think, you know, yes, sometimes he might overdo it, but it's fun. He does it fun. I cannot say that enough. He does it fun.
It's not like, you know, lens flares. You know, it's not like somebody walks into a room, opens up the refrigerator, there's a beer, and they open it up, and there's a giant explosion.
But it would be a Budweiser, and you would see the label.
That's true. Oh, God, there you go. Product placement.
We'll talk about that one in a moment.
God, that's a Michael Bay cliche. We're just like seeing Victoria's Secret. Oh,
the sign didn't blow up, but everything around it did.
What was in the last movie? Was it the Budweiser truck or something like that? Yeah, oh, God. Yeah. It's so funny.
See, I love Michael Bay's cliches. I love the slow spins or this just watching our heroes approach us slowly like they did in Armageddon. You know, in a Michael Bay film, there's always going to be an American flag somewhere and it is going to flap slowly and probably with a setting sun behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It is probably, you could even call it patriot porn if you wanted to. I mean, there's so many types of porn that he gets into, whether it's military, patriotism, explosions, bullets. I mean, the guy is all about giving the audience the most amazing, spectacular, explosive experience that he can give. And I can't fault somebody for that. It's what he does. It's what he does well. And, you know, God damn it, I want to keep seeing him do it. But product placement is a bit of an issue some people have brought up with Bay, increasingly, especially with Transformers 4, because a lot of people felt like there were too many moments where some products or brands were displayed in a manner that was egregious or something. And to that, I say, fuck off.
He's got to pay for it.
Movies have to be made. Yeah. They take money. And if money is going to come from Budweiser, then I'm fine with that. If it had just said beer, I would have been thrown out of the movie. But because it was an actual brand, I don't mind it. And it actually doesn't throw me out of the film. It's like when people started talking about, and I'm going to speak up for Scott Clark here. When people started talking about advertising in games, mm-hmm. a lot of people were like, oh, you can't do that. It's going to diminish you, blah, blah, blah. Some games, yes. But if I'm in a racing game or if I'm in a sports game and there is an advertisement on the side for Ever Ready batteries or Coca-Cola, I expect to actually see those things because they do exist in the real world. So in the movie, when a Budweiser truck blows up and he picks up one and starts drinking it, and we make sure to see that label, it doesn't bother me because Budweiser is a real brand. They have real trucks and real beer, and therefore I'm not taken out from it. I don't personally get all the grief that people want to create over product placement.
If it's a little bit too obvious, then I do roll my eyes, but I go on with it.
I do roll my eyes. Yeah.
in the Avengers, the scene at the battle, the big battle in New York, Captain America standing there and posing and stuff. And all of a sudden, you know, you see all you see in the really the main focus is not even on the characters that's in the front of the screen. It's the Farm Bureau sign that's untouched when everything else around it is
yep.
is destroyed. And it's, and that is distracting. But again, if it's part of the story, his hand just happens to cover three quarters of the beer, except for the name on it. I get it. And I understand it, it is a necessity. And when you're making a $200 million budgeted movie, you are going to take all the donations that you possibly can.
Absolutely. And you know what? I don't care. I do roll my eyes. Like when I'm watching Transformers 4 and there's an explosion surrounding the Victoria's Secret sign, and Victoria's Secret doesn't, because I'm sure that they have an explosion contract where they're not allowed to blow up certain signs or something, and it remains untouched. Yeah, I roll my eyes, but I really don't care. I get that movies have to be paid for. These movies aren't cheap. You know, he's blowing up half the continent at this point. I mean, hell, I think Hong Kong was product placement.
Hey, I think Chicago needs to pay Bay some money so he doesn't blow Chicago up.
Yeah, why does he hate Chicago? Like,
dude, leave us alone. Move on to another city.
Get the city council after him and say, hey, look, man, can you take it easy a little bit?
Somebody I went to the movie with said, Divergent is what happened after Michael Bay's Transformers.
Yeah, I can believe that. Definitely. I mean, it's not like, you know, I like that he can find interesting ways, at least if he's going to put in a product placement, make it interesting. I mean, it's not like Marky Mark stopped to get a beer in between action moments. It was right in the middle of everything. And it turned out to be a funny moment when that person that you know, came out asking if, you know, demanding that he have insurance to pay for what happened. And he bends down, gets that beer, pops it open off the guy's car door, and then asks his daughter to hand him his alien gun.
Yeah.
It's a funny moment. If you have to put that kind of stuff into a movie, at least do it entertaining. And that's what he always does. And plus, Michael Bay does have a relationship with Victoria's Secret. He directed one of their campaigns a few years ago. So, you know, he and them kind of go way back. So I'm sure that's where that relationship developed.
Don't we from. All but, wish we had a relationship with Victoria's Secret?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we do. All right, let's talk about critics now. Why is it that you guys think that certain portions of the audience and the critics jump all over Michael Bay films even before they come out? I mean, I think a lot of these people probably have their reviews already written before they even see one frame of a film. Why do you think that he gets so much hate?
I honestly have no answer for this. I really don't. I don't see what is so, like I said earlier, I don't see what is so different between his movies and J.J. Abrams. I don't think they're that much smarter. I really don't. I don't think he does things much differently. I think his movies are a lot more fun than a lot of the movies, or entertaining than a lot of the movies that people rave about that are the big blockbusters. So I don't quite get it. I don't get it. Is it just because he's so successful and his movies always make money? I mean, almost always, except for Pain and Gain, which was really a small movie. But his movies almost always make money. Are they just jealous of the fact that he gets so much attention? I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, Brian, do you have any answers for us?
Man, I've always got answers, but it may not necessarily be to the question that was asked. But I don't know about the critics specifically, but I think you touched on it earlier with the hipster's comment, where there's a lot of people who's just, it's just their instinct, their natural reaction to hate something that most people like.
Yes.
And, true. True.
And it's just, oh, I'm excited. Oh man, that Transformers movie looks good. And it is just their, it's just their genetic makeup to go, oh, you want to see that? Here's why it sucks. Cause mm-hmm. Michael Bay is directing it.
Yep. And
I'm sorry. I still have not heard a legitimate point on from any critic or person that why his movies quote unquote suck. Here's what I'm realizing pretty quick here is that, all right, just about all the critics hate this movie. Just generally speaking, mm-hmm. the critics hated this movie. Yet these movies, again, we're talking about movies that have grossed $2 billion, you know, $3 billion, whatever it is, just the Transformers movies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why do we even need film critics? It's got to be just about the most useless job in the world outside of, I don't know, politicians. Why do we really judge the movie that we want to see by what somebody else says?
Be careful. Don't put us out of a fake
obviously,
job.
No, I mean, we're critics to a certain extent, but I don't look at us that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't see a need for them. What good do they do? There's enough marketing and stuff out there. The studios don't need critics to spread the word like they used to 40 years ago. There's no need for them. So if all the critics hammer this movie, yet it's still making gazillions of dollars, why? Why are they around?
Brian poses a deep question. I don't know why I just went into Tonto mode, but
Kimosabe. Brian poses deep question, Kimosabe.
Well, you know, that is a good point. I mean, I think that the general point of why do we need critics is a bigger topic than just Michael Bay. But I do think that a lot of people, critics included, have kind of preloaded their opinion, or they have become so biased by their opinion of Michael Bay that they cannot review a film of his without that bias being front and center. I think a lot of people hate him because he does come off as a little bit of a dude bro. He's a fraternity guy. He's unabashed in his love for explosions and action. He is a commercial success, and those kinds of things do lead certain people, hipsters, to hating on people. You know, any kind of commercial success means that you are suddenly less than as an artist or something. And so that's what's going to get him hate. I think some people hate movie video style shooting, whether it's the fast clips, the spins, you know, the highly frenetic visuals. I think some people do get put off by that. And I think, you know, if those put you off, I understand. And that is a legitimate thing to dislike, but that's just you. Don't put that on everyone else. I love that shit.
You know what I hate is the people, and you'll talk to, you know, Justin, you and I are both all over Facebook or forums and whatnot. So we know who some of those people are, and we just kind of, you know, just reject their opinion before they even state it. But the people that hate it before they've ever seen it, they just go on about how it's going to suck, and then they go and see it and then review it. I shut up. Just shut up. We already know what your review is going to be because you went into it hating it. You, before you ever walked in the door, you already decided this movie's going to suck. There is nothing Michael Bay could do to change your mind. So why are you even bothering? Why do you feel the need, I have to see it opening night just so I can tell everybody else how awful it is?
If it's your job and you're a critic, then you really kind of have no choice.
Absolutely.
But yeah, there are so many audience members that walk into that. They will pay $10 for their ticket, and they'll pay $10 or whatever for their refreshments just so they can come out with justification to hating a movie. Because they know if they don't see it and they, you know, they say they hate it and somebody asks, well, did you see it? And they say no, then that their opinion will be dismissed automatically. But if they actually paid money, then they have paid for the right to shit all over his films. And to them, I'm like, send me your 20. You know, don't go to the movie. Just send me your $20 and say whatever you want to say, and we'll all just completely ignore you. But don't waste that money at the theater. Just send it to me, because I could use your 20.
Yeah, he could redo The Sound of Music and shoot it in a Quentin Tarantino style, and they would still hate it no matter what.
Absolutely,
it would be something. It could be the complete opposite. And they're still, for whatever reason, what is he thinking? He's so stupid doing something like that. This is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter, like you say, it doesn't matter what he does. They've got some bias against him. And I honestly just don't get it. At least my bias against M. Night Shyamalan is every movie he makes gets worse and worse. And there's evidence against it. or yeah, against the, I should say for it. It's against him. Here's why. It, you know, he's trending over his five or six movies, and it's not in a good direction.
And it's diminishing returns. He's made less money. He's made less audience members are going to see his films. I mean, there's something to show for that.
Right. But yet, Michael Bay, every movie he makes, I mean, the worst one he did was The Island, monetarily speaking.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, Pain and Gain made less, but it also cost less to film.
Yeah, they were both his only misses were those two movies.
Yeah, The Island and Pain and Gain.
Well, yeah, but Pain and Gain, I mean, the budget was $26 million and it grossed domestically 49, yeah, almost $50 million.
I get what you're
saying. So it still made money, but The Island lost money. But The Island was like $126 million budget, where it only made like $162 million worldwide.
Right.
Even still, it brought in money, barely, but it brought in money. Probably not with marketing, but it at least it pretty much came close to breaking even, and that's his worst movie.
So, a lot of directors would be quite envious to have that kind of record.
They do. My question, I don't know if I'm stepping on your, you know, but do you guys think those people should be even reviewing movies? Do you think, because papers and websites and everything else, they have more than one critic. Don't you think that the critic going to see a Michael Bay movie should be people that actually enjoy those kinds of movies? If they have the availability?
Well, I think I voiced my opinion on critics, so I'll let Justin go with this one.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a hard question to answer, because there is the fanboy side of me that says, no, you know, if you don't appreciate this style of movie, then don't go see it. It's as simple as that. But then there's the, you know, the more artsy side of me that says, well, anybody should be able to see anything and voice their opinion on it. And I think that's true, but I think that a lot of these people aren't really voicing. They're not giving the art a fair shake.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they're not voicing an opinion on the product itself without.
It's more about the man.
Exactly.
And I definitely think that these people that hate him, just there is nothing he could do. Like Brian said, there's nothing he could do that would ever bring them back around. You know, maybe if around the time of Armageddon or Pearl Harbor, he did something different, maybe that would have done it. But by now, you know, 11 movies in, 20 years in, it is beyond the point that people will be changing their opinions on Michael Bay and his movies. So, you know, if you're a critic who's predisposed to not like his films, if you have not liked any of his films, please, for the love of God, don't go see any more. I don't want to read your opinion. I don't want to see your rants. You knew going into it exactly what you're going to be getting. There is no surprise that his movies are the way that they are. So please, for the love of God, shut the fuck up. Don't see the movies and save yourself and us the aggravation of your vitriol that none of us are interested in.
I agree, and I want to
boom.
That's my explosion noise again. And to Brian's point, I disagree on the critics thing. I think we need critics, especially movie fans. There's so many movies. I want an idea of what is worth my time and what is not. I realize we go by marketing for a lot of things, but there's a lot of critics I respect. And I think the ones that I respect and the ones that other people will follow or listen to, you know, people listen to our show and there's four voices. And there's probably one or two voices that they really listen to because they understand how they review movies as close to how they see things. That's important. And I'm sure it's always you, Justin. But I think we need critics because it helps inform us when, you know, we're making a monetary decision like that. But what's important if you're going to be a critic or you're going to be someone who reviews movies, whether you love them or just because it's your job, whatever it is to go in open-minded. If you can't go in with your brain, you know, when people talk about checking your brain at the door, that's where you should be checked. You should check your expectations at the door and walk in and just watch the movie. Now, if it is an awful movie and you're watching it, fair enough. But if you walked in expecting an awful movie and it becomes that, and that's what you write up, that's not fair to the movie. You're not really being critical. You're just being an ass. And I don't see the need for those kinds of critics, but the people that can be open-minded, I absolutely think we need.
I agree. And one thing that if a critic has gone to college and studied film history and film theory, and if they can pepper their reviews with bits of historical anecdotes and maybe some inside information about why certain shots are the way they are, or why directors did certain things that they did, that's more knowledge for the rest of us. But most of the time, it's just a screed. When it comes to Bay, it's just a screed. Oh, I hate him. I hate blah, blah, blah. And I'm just not interested in reading that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now let's go ahead and talk about some specific films and talk about what the critics have said. The first one we're going to talk about is The Rock. And here's a little clip before we hear what the critics said.
This is General Hummel. Drop your weapons. Drop them!
Anderson here, General Hummel. Commander. Team leader.
Commander Anderson, if you have any concern for the lives of your men, you will order them to safety their weapons and place them on the deck.
This is not happening. Sir, we know why you're out here. God knows I agree with you. But like you, I swore to defend this country against all enemies, foreign, sir, and domestic. General, we've spilled the same blood in the same mud. You know goddamn well I can't get that order.
We're dead.
Your unit is covered from an elevated position, Commander. I'm not gonna ask again. Don't do anything stupid. No one has to die here.
Man following the general. You're under oath as United States Marines! Have you forgotten that? We all have shipmates we remember. Some of them were shit on and pissed on by the Pentagon. But that doesn't give you the right to mutiny!
You call it what you want! You're down there, we're up here! You walk into the wrong goddamn room, Commander! Goddamn it, Commander, one last time. You tell your men to safety their weapons, drop them on the deck.
I cannot give that order!
I am not going to repeat that order!
I will not give that order!
What the hell is wrong with you, man?
Stand fast!
All right, now the critics, let's go with Doug Thomas from the Seattle Times. On The Rock, he says, you might need to take Dramamine before entering a Michael Bay movie. The one-time music video director has an annoying habit of finding the tightest shots, editing the heck out of them, and scoring the works to loud music. Shit, that sounds cool to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't sound too bad. Mm-hmm. And it's not too far off. I mean, the way it, Dramamine is a medication. It's some people, over-the-counter stuff that people take for motion sickness. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I get it. I probably should have taken some before I watched Cloverfield, though.
I got to tell you, The Rock is one of my favorite Michael Bay. It actually is my favorite Michael Bay movie.
It may be one of my favorite action movies of all time.
It's so well done. How you can find something to critique in that one that makes it a negative, I don't know, because I think the performances are great. It's probably one of Sean Connery's best roles. Nicolas Cage did a
wonderful. He's good in it.
He's very good in it, and he's not your typical action hero. He kind of changed how.
Glass or plastic.
Yeah, and people don't. You have to go back to remember, because people don't remember, it was so long ago. It was like 20 years ago or whatever. But Nicolas Cage is not your typical action hero then. Then he would never be cast in an action movie. It was shocking that he was in an action role of any kind. And he actually doesn't really do much action in the movie until the very, very end. I think his performance or that movie kind of changed how we see action heroes going forward from that point.
I think he certainly did a great job with pairing up two actors who couldn't be more dissimilar and making a film that was just a roller coaster of action and fun. If I had to put a list together of my top five action movies, The Rock would definitely be in it, and it would be near the top. Yeah, it's just badass.
Yeah, totally. And the way that, kind of going to the character development stuff, by the end of the movie, you're almost on the side of the villain. Once you learn his motivation for doing this, Ed Harris's motivation for taking the actions he's taken,
mm-hmm.
You almost go like, well, dang, all right, I kind of understand where you're coming from now. And you, in a way, part of you pulls for it. And which I guess is unlike, some of his other movies. But for the most part, I love that movie. Great. I've probably watched it 100 times. It's just, and again, that scene that you mentioned where they're in the, I guess.
It's like Alcatraz, the underbelly of Alcatraz. Yeah.
Right, you're right. It's almost like a shower room or something. I don't know what it is. But anyway, there's all that tile and they're coming up. Those seals are coming up from the bottom and they're yelling at each other. God, that is such an intense scene.
Which is the clip they just listened to. So you know that they're reminded how awesome that scene was.
Oh, okay.
And the visuals are fantastic. I mean, using San Francisco for that car chase, that was such an awesome car chase. It was just, I thought it was a beautifully shot movie. The action was great. The performances were great. I had a sympathetic villain I could get behind. Like Brian said, I actually sympathized with him. You know, I didn't sympathize with him killing innocent military men, but I kind of got what he was going for. What he was trying to accomplish made sense to me. And not many villains do their motives make sense.
I know. I thought the Ozarka truck they crashed through was odd product placement. I mean, it was all in my face as those bottles came flying towards the screen. Now, Gene Siskel said there isn't a shot, scene, or sequence in The Rock that doesn't move furiously, typically with colored lights flashing into our faces or onto those of the actors. Yeah, more good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And that's part of a negative review. Don't get it, Gene. God rest your soul. Sorry, I just don't get it. I'm okay with it.
I mean, an action movie without fast cuts, to me, I don't know, maybe it's just because I've grown up with that, but that's a part of what action is. It's chaos. It's things moving quickly. It's not, you know, it's not staying static in one place as things go on around you. It's being right in the midst of it. And that's what I love about Bay's films.
I mean, there are different ways to shoot it. You could shoot a long cut and you could shoot a car chase just from a couple static cameras and make it exciting. It's just a different way to shoot it. It doesn't make it bad. It's just different. And it's exciting.
All right, now let's move on to, I think, easily his least liked film, though, you know, it is his lowest critic reviewed. Well, no, actually, Bad Boys 2 was critically 2% points lower. But Pearl Harbor is not a film that I think too many people held close to their hearts. Let's hear a quick clip about that one.
Is it true? Men are still trapped alive inside the Arizona?
We can hear tapping from inside the hull. We're doing everything we can to get to them, but they're 40 feet below water.
We've been trained to think that we're invincible. And now our proudest ships has been destroyed by an enemy we considered inferior. We're on the ropes, gentlemen. That's exactly why we have to strike back now.
We're preparing an attack against the Marshall and Gilbert Islands, sir, to keep
I'm talking about hitting the heart of Japan the way they have hit us.
Mr. President, Pearl Harbor caught us unawares because we didn't face facts. This isn't a time for ignoring them again. The Army Air Corps has long-range bombers, but no place to launch them. Midway is too far, and Russia won't allow us to launch a raid from there.
Admiral?
Navy's planes are small. They carry light loads and have a short range. We'd have to get them within a few hundred miles of Japan and therefore risk our carriers. And if we lose our carriers, we'll have no shield against invasion.
Does anyone in this room think that victory is possible without facing danger? We are at war.
All right, now Mary Ann Johnson, a flick philosopher, she says, the kind of crap that deserves to be slapped silly. And Scott Weinberg of E-Film Critic says, boring, unpleasant, and ghoulish. Surely the people who died at Pearl Harbor deserve better than this.
All right. So she's got a site called Flick Philosopher.
Right. Obviously, off the bat, she's not
right off the bat. Yeah, she's not, I don't know. It's about as credible as the Hollywood Outsider, as far as I'm concerned. Again, Pearl Harbor, I really liked because it gave me a sense of what it was like to be there. And what was going on at the time. It gave me a sense of basically the surprise of all of a sudden, once they kind of realize what's going on, it's way too late. And then to all the chaos and destruction going on with the bombing and being on the ship and the ship's capsizing. And it's just, again, I watched Pearl Harbor and focus more on the action part of it and some of the story that leads up to it. To me, you could just, The love story part is almost a separate movie. You could edit that out and make probably an hour long movie out of itself. Mm-hmm. And you could literally have two movies. So it was visually it was stunning. So again, some of the scenes with the bomb that was going down, and you follow it all the way down, you hear it, it's quiet, you hear the little propellers turning as it's falling, the little whistle. Even Cuba Gooding Jr., I got attached to his role as a cook or a, mm-hmm. something yeah. like that. And he ends up stepping up and manning the guns in defense. I love it. I didn't care for Josh Hartnett, but I liked it.
Do you think Ben Affleck hate entered into any of this?
Yes. Backlash, Ben Affleck, clash, mm-hmm. Afflash.
Back Affleck, flash. Something. I feel like now I'm doing commercials. Affleck.
Yeah, was there much going on? Are you talking about? Do you think this is what maybe started Ben Affleck?
No, I think
hate, or do you think that there was hatred before it? Which
I don't know the exact timing of when the Ben Affleck hate started. I know, you know, the whole Geely thing really started tanking his career, but I don't remember exactly what year those things. Cohen, you know, where Pearl Harbor fits with that. But all I know is he was getting a lot of crap as well. So maybe that was just two points of critic negativity maybe coming together. I don't know.
And I think it was the storyline went a little too close to Titanic's route, which is we incorporate a love story to tell this disaster story. And I think that was probably a mistake. They should have focused more on just the military angle. But, you know, yeah, you almost have to do that to make it an engaging film for people. And I do want to add, because I talked to my grandfather was in World War II, and he actually was at Pearl Harbor. He wasn't actually in the war, but he got there like 2 days after, I think, the bombing. And when he was laid up and near the end of his days, I asked him about it because he'd seen the movie. You know, how close was that? It's just a movie buff, something a stupid movie buff would ask his grandfather, who was in the war, because, you know, you like to compare a movie to a war. And he said he saw it, and the love story was stupid. But the actual bombing and the very end of the movie were so close to what actually happened, it was impressive. So it was hard for him to just dismiss it. He just, you know, he could have done without, like Brian said, could have done without the love story. So I don't think the actual points about what happened at Pearl Harbor, I think, are very well done. I can defend them all day because I think the action is good. The loss of life is felt because it's a real event. So I think we really feel it. I think Bay did a great job of showcasing the tragedy of that event. Unfortunately, he kind of bookended it with a really crappy love story that just didn't play. You know, like the Titanic love story, that gets me every time. I can still watch it and then something like, oh, Jack, you know, why can't you share that board, woman? And, you know, you watch this one, I just want all of them to die horribly and quickly. Just get to what happened. But I can watch that action scene over and over and over. It's just one of the best action scenes ever filmed. I totally believe that.
Well, I can't speak much to Pearl Harbor. I've only seen it once. Didn't really feel too compelled to come back to it. I neither love it nor hate it.
It's long.
Do what?
It's long. It's 3 hours long. It's too long.
Well, and I do think that if there is one of the legitimate criticisms of Michael Bay is that he is excessive mm-hmm. with his run times. Now let's go ahead and move on though to my personal favorite Michael Bay movie of all time, Armageddon, Deep Impact. You were so shown up by this film. It's ridiculous. Let's hear a clip.
Daddy.
Hi, Gracie. Hi, honey.
Grace, I know I promised you I was coming home.
I don't understand.
Looks like I'm gonna have to break that promise.
I lied to you too. When I told you that I didn't want to be like you. Because I am like you. And everything good that I have inside of me, I have from you. I love you so much, Daddy. I'm so proud of you. I'm so scared. I'm so scared.
I know it, baby. But but there won't be anything to be scared of soon. Gracie, I want you to know AJ saved us. He did. I want you to tell Chick that I couldn't have done it without him. None of it. I want you to take care of AJ. I wish I could be there to walk you down the aisle. But I'll look in on you from time to time, okay, honey? I love you, Grace.
I love you, too.
Gotta go now, honey.
Daddy, no. No, no, Dad, no.
Oh, so sad.
Now, Peter Coe of the Boston Phoenix says, not long into Armageddon's 2.5-hour length, I found myself thinking, let the planet go. Nothing's worth this aggravation. And Roger Ebert, who was with the Chicago Sun-Times, says, the movie is an assault on the eyes, the ears, the brain, common sense, and the human desire to be entertained. No matter what they're charging to get it, it's worth more to get out. Ouch.
He was a big Michael Bay hater. He really didn't like Michael Bay.
It makes me think that I think that there are just some film critics that take the idea of cinema and they put it on a pedestal that is so high that only, you know, a rarefied type of film could sit on top of it. And anything less than that denigrates what film is. And to them, I say phooey. You know, but we've kind of gone on that. But
we can keep going. I don't care because it's Ebert, ridiculous.
If you were here, that's what I would say. There is room for these films. I don't want Citizen Kane or Casablanca all the fucking time.
No.
I want something that's just, yeah, you know, sometimes I want a Looney Tunes cartoon, but with explosions, you know, real explosions.
Now, if they would have had, you know, some poor guy, he's got a mental disability and he overcomes that in the middle of Armageddon, would that be okay? Would that make this movie any better? I don't think so.
That would have so sucked.
Yeah, it would have been so moody and depressing. And then he finds out he's got HIV and a drug habit. I mean, just sometimes it's okay to have a movie that isn't trying to be, like you said, Citizen Kane or something serious. Every movie should be judged on what that movie's trying to do, not what you think all movies should be.
I agree. And that does seem to be a dividing line amongst critics. It's either they will review a movie based on what the movie wants it to be, or they're going to review a movie based on what they want that movie to be. Mm-hmm. And their reviews will tell you which side of that line they're on. Those people that review films based on what they wanted it to be, or a game or a book or a TV show or anything, music. If you're judging something on what you want it to be, you have failed from the beginning. And because you never gave that art a chance. All art needs to be judged, I feel, on what it is, not on what you thought it should be, wanted it to be, but what it is.
And that's exactly why we started this podcast to begin with, is just to give a voice to people that actually just like all movies, not one particular kind.
I thought we started because you told me I had to show up. I thought that's why I was here.
Yeah, well, that's why you're here. Justin's here because he wants to be. You're here because you're contractually obligated.
Shit.
You got dick pics on him?
I do, yeah.
The middle.
Right next to my ear.
No, well, never mind.
Let it go, Brian. Shut up. Let it go.
And you guys know how much I can harp on some movies about illogical, you know, inconsistencies, breaking scientific rules. I mean, hello, Gravity. We almost got in an argument because I brought up a few things that I, you know, felt like Neil deGrasse Tyson was absolutely right on. But even with my love of those things, Armageddon, which shits on so many scientific rules and theories, it is still fucking fun. Mm-hmm. From beginning to end, it is a joy ride with these guys, and it is just a blast to watch that movie. I don't know how many times I've seen it, but I'm sure I'll see it many more times before I die, because the guys who, you know, these roughnecks that go up there to try and stop that asteroid, they worked together. I mean, they really do. They are a cohesive group, ensemble of actors, and it works like gangbusters. Even if it makes no fucking sense whatsoever, it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it is my favorite of his films.
We all know that if an asteroid was hurling at the world, or meteor, asteroid, I don't remember which one it was, but was hurling at the Earth, the last thing NASA's actually going to do is recruit the greatest deep core driller on the planet. They're probably going to have an astronaut go up there and handle this business. It's ridiculous. They would never train them in time. It would never happen. We get it. We don't care. Who cares right. how I mean, scientifically accurate
these guys?
It is.
I mean, these astronauts train for years and years and years, and they within like a week they're going to turn some oil rig drillers into astronauts.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. It's told. There's told me so many things that's just ludicrous about it. But like Justin, this is by far my favorite Michael Bay movie, and everything from the lines, the scenes where they're getting the physicals done, and I. Just cracks me up, but I just love it.
Yeah, and it,
well, and even
it's
the
strangely
shitty little
moving.
Love moments actually kind of work.
Which ones? I'm sorry, I cut you
the
off.
Shitty little love moments. Yeah. You know, Ben Affleck, whether he's playing Graham Cracker Safari on her tummy, or they're hugging each other in one of those engine exhaust thingy doos on the back of a rocket. It's still, you know, those weren't to me, those weren't low points of a movie, which usually in an action movie, like with Pearl Harbor, the romance moments are usually kind of the slow letdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Those never let me down at all.
Yeah. But you know, those were more like seasoning to a meal, where Pearl Harbor was almost like a side dish.
You know? That you didn't want.
Yeah.
That you didn't write like, ugh, who really eats?
Who gave me broccoli?
Who we? I didn't want coleslaw.
Yeah.
You guys got anything more for Armageddon?
So it's so well done. The end gets me every time. The characters I felt for, even though they're not deep and rich and everything else, they're still people I really enjoyed. You know, what was it? Chick? Is that his buddy?
Yeah.
Yeah, Chick. I just, you know, he's such a nice guy, and you've got Buscemi in there who's doing a great job, and he's doing the comedic relief. William Fichtner is in there, and he does a great job. Ben Affleck. Michael Clark Duncan. Everybody in this movie just did a great job. The only part that ever took me out of it was hearing Liv Tyler's dad singing over her love moment. I just thought that was kind of weird. That took me a little awkward. But outside of that, everything works for me. And that end between Harry and AJ, and then Harry and his daughter, both of those moments make me just want to...
When Harry pulls that fucking... little air hose, or mm-hmm. that patch thing, and they're on opposite sides of that door from that elevator, and Ben Affleck's just screaming, Harry, oh fuck, I'm about to start tearing up right now.
It works. Well, how it do people so slam good. On that movie? It's meant to be entertainment. None of that, just like Gravity, it's not meant to be a realized version of a space mission.
It wouldn't Cosmos.
Exactly. It's meant to be a fun action ride, and it is. It's like the right stuff for people that don't want all the truth of the right stuff.
Absolutely. And then, him talking to Grace.
Oh, Jesus. Every time.
I did. I weep every time. Because Liv Tyler is just crying as she watches her father's last moments, her last words with him before he goes and dies. That's some powerful stuff. All right. Before I start just blubbering like a complete puss, let's move on to the two... franchises that are Michael Bay's biggest and baddest of them all. Let's start with Bad Boys series. Let's hear a clip on this one.
We getting old, Mike. One of them young punks coming to take my baby out on the first date. Who the fuck are you?
Hi, Mr. Burnett. I'm Reggie.
What you doing here?
Came to take out Megan.
What?
I came to take out Megan.
How old are you?
I'm 15, Mr. Burnett.
Motherfucker, you look 30. Show me some ID.
I don't have none on me.
You don't have no ID? Get your ass up against that wall. What the fuck is your problem? You think you know it all? You little young thundercats. You got joints on you?
No.
You smoke that shit?
No, sir.
You trying to get my daughter high? You smoke
Harvey.
That shit?
Nigga, who that is,
dog? It's Reggie.
Who the fuck is Reggie?
Came to take Megan out.
What you want, nigga?
I'm here to take his daughter out.
What's your name?
Reggie.
Well, no, I heard a motherfucker say your name, Reggie. You want you taking Megan out?
Yes, sir.
How old is you?
15.
Shit, nigga, you at least 30.
This is my...
Can you fight? You can fight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you motherfucker, you can't fight. Look at
Mike,
you. Look.
Mike,
no, I want to know if the nigga. I want to know if somebody's gonna take my niece out. I want to know if the nigga can fight. Somebody might come say something. Hey. The nigga can't fight. She can't go.
Megan's godfather, okay? He just got off the joint.
Why you putting all my business in the street? Why you putting all?
I just got out of jail and I ain't going back. I ain't going back.
What's wrong with you?
No, no.
Acting all scared, nigga. You ain't never seen a gun before.
Mike, stop pointing the gun at the boy, man.
Nigga, look, don't you. Disrespect me in front of company.
All right, let the gun go off. You don't
nigga,
have...
Nigga, you a big old tall ludicrous looking motherfucker, ain't you? You rap?
No.
Move, no. Nigga. Hey, get out the way. Hey, if I see you on the highway, get the fuck out of my way.
Hey, Mike!
Now listen, have my daughter home at 10:01. If she ain't home at 10:01, I'm in the car, okay? Lock, loaded, and hunting your motherfucking ass down.
Do you hear me?
And I'm going with
the fuck up, Reggie.
And if I'm there, you know what it's going to be? Chitty, chitty, bang, bang, nigga. That's what it's going to be.
Marcus! Oh, Reggie, baby, I am so sorry. Please forgive Megan's dad and his silly friend.
You a virgin?
Yes.
All right, keep it that way. Ain't going to be no fucking that night.
Baby, the red shirt's nice. I like that. You guys have a good time.
You ever made love to a man?
No.
You want to?
No, sir.
That poor Reggie.
You ever made love to a man? You want to?
Literally 30. Now, Roger Ebert, who we earlier said can't stop washing Michael Bay's balls, says, there was once a time when a hero would sacrifice his own life rather than injure innocent bystanders. No longer. The heroes of Bad Boys 2 are egotistical monsters concerned only with their power, their one-liners, their weapons, their cars, their desires. I suppose I shouldn't be surprised that characters who wipe out a village can also make cruel jokes at the expense of a kid on his first date. Hey, Reg, everybody involved in this project needs to do some community service.
That is one of my all-time favorite critics' quotes. Even though I disagree with everything he said, I still think it's very well written, and it makes me laugh just reading it.
Well, you know, he does bring up a certain point that, you know, in years before, I think our heroes in these films would take every measure they could to not injure innocent people while they're, you know, struggling to fight the bad guys. And now, you know, over probably about the past 15, 20 years, that really has changed. And I think, you know, now you just, not to get too far into another show Aaron and I do, but Jack Bauer, he will shoot motherfuckers in the leg, innocent or not, to get where he needs to go. He will knock people the fuck out, even if they're good guys, if they get in his way. You didn't used to see that. Do you guys, you know, as a little side tangent, do you guys see that as a bad thing, or you just see it as just our culture and society's kind of changed? And, you know, while we understand that these innocent peoples in the Cuban favela aren't really dying, does it matter that we've lost that kind of regard for the innocent people in a movie?
It's context. If the movie's trying to be just a piece of entertainment, I have no problem with it. They could mow down that whole village, and I don't care. I really don't care. It's meant to be entertainment. They're not trying to be a realistic depiction of actual CIA operatives in a foreign land. You know, it isn't like that. They're not trying to be, these are real Miami cops, and this is what they really do. It's a freaking buddy action comedy that's meant to just be ridiculous and over the top. That's what the franchise means to be. So I have zero problem with it. If they went back, they backed that thing up and just ran over the village again, I'd still be fine with it.
Wait, I think there are a couple people we missed.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Go back and get them. They might be drug dealers someday. Get them. Yeah, I'm fine with it.
What about you, Brian?
Blow up more stuff as far as I'm concerned. I don't care. This is just the buddy cop movie just taken to a whole different level. This was one of those movies that I liked and didn't even realize I liked. It was a Michael Bay movie till years later.
Mm-hmm.
Until I was paying more attention to Michael Bay and then went back and was like, holy crap, I didn't realize he, you know, he did that. So,
I did. You know, I'm sorry.
I think to be fair, Michael Bay is not the only one who has kind of lost
respect,
lost the desire to save innocent people in their movies. I know we've brought up the Avengers multiple times here. It's probably my last time to do it. And that movie, Iron Man, is trying to direct these beasties around New York, which is inevitably leading them right into buildings that they crash through and bring down, probably killing people by the hundreds, if not thousands. But I don't see that criticism leveled at that movie or any other movie where entire, you know, cities are blowing up because our heroes are in there fighting, but Michael Bay gets it. Now, Man of Steel did kind of get that because of the whole fight between Zod and Superman in Metropolis, and it was bringing down all sorts of shit. But for the most part, Bay's the one who gets tagged with this and no one else. And I think that's a bit cherry picking of critics to do that.
And to point out Roger Ebert, you know, he critically approved of Lethal Weapon 2, you know, years ago. How many lives did that take when they're having that car chase downtown? You know, and they're driving, they're having this ridiculous car chase that should have stopped about 14 minutes before it actually did. How many lives were lost from that? They're driving through buildings and whatnot. It's a ridiculous concept to sit there and try to equate responsibility to a movie like Bad Boys 2. I just don't think it's fair. The movie itself is trying to be as – they throw cadavers at the cops while they're having a car chase. There's nothing about it that's trying to be realistic.
Well, and it's called Bad Boys, not Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
Not, you know, not high and mighty good guys. They're bad boys. This is what bad boys do.
And we've had heroes that are actually anti-heroes for years. I mean, they've really taken prevalence in the last few years especially. But they've been around for years. Snake Plissken. He's not a hero. He's an anti-hero. That's just, I don't understand people sometimes.
Well, a few other people chimed in on Bad Boys. Rita Kipling of the Washington Post said, Bad Boys is relentless, formulaic fodder for the explosion-starved. It's loud, shallow, sexist, and a complete waste of time. And James Berardinelli of Real View said, Bad Boys 2 isn't just bad. It's a catastrophic violation of every aspect of cinema that I, as a film critic, hold dear. Now, do you think that that sentence is just as hyperbolic and over-the-top stupid as the film he's trying to review?
I absolutely do, and it's exactly why he shouldn't be reviewing it. Because he obviously already decided what this movie was going to be. He obviously thinks films should be a specific way, so you should only see those specific films if that's how you feel. You're obviously not open-minded. You're not open to this kind of film. Now, the Rita Kempley one, where she says it's loud, shallow, sexist, and a complete waste of time, I agree with her completely until the complete waste of time part. It's loud, shallow, and sexist, and I love it.
Well, we could get into this a bit more in the Transformers, but let's talk about it a little bit. The one criticism she's got that I actually can kind of go with is the sexist part. I do think his movies are fairly misogynistic. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Yeah.
And do you think that's something he should change, or fuck it, just let him make them the way he wants to, and if he wants to be sexist, so be it.
What? Explain to me what is so sexist about it. Maybe because I'm a sexist. Maybe that's why I'm not seeing it as obviously as you guys are. But I see two guys. One guy is married and pretty happy with his wife. The other guy is a ladies' man. He's good looking. He's living the almost a playboy lifestyle. I mean, I don't know. Outside of that, I don't really.
I think what they're talking about is that
it ain't called Bad Girls. So I mean, it's,
well, that's true. But I think, you know, as you know, over the career of Michael Bay, I think the one thing that I wish that he would put a little work into, or maybe a little more consideration, is that women in his movies, you know, they can be there for more than just something really sexy to look at. As much as,
well, there's a big difference between Megan Fox in Transformers and Taya Leone. She wasn't exactly sexified up too much.
Well, she was a hooker, and she did look pretty good.
No, but she wasn't the hooker. Her friend was a hooker.
Oh, she was a friend of the hooker. Yeah. That's right.
She's
that's right.
Her friend was the hooker.
But as And it's also the a lot of lack of female characters. I mean, The Rock, I think, just had Nicolas Cage's girlfriend, who we see infrequently. Armageddon had the daughter. Pearl Harbor had the love interest. Gabrielle Union in Bad Boys 2, she was strong, feisty, sexy, and a good character. But for me, she kind of fell apart when suddenly she was kidnapped, became the damsel in distress, and they had to go and save her. And then, of course, you get the Megan Fox effect in the first two, and then, what's her name in 3 and 4.
I was just kind of being more specific on Bad Boys, but
yeah, I guess you're right. I retract my statement. I don't agree with that one. Bad Boys really isn't that sexist when you think about it. The women are, they're not over sexified in that one. Like Transformers, yes. I mean, he's got a thing for young women.
Right. I mean, when you see the sweat glistening off of Megan Fox's stomach, which
is delicious. I mean, that's awful. It's shameful.
Just give me a moment. Just a moment.
We're all so right. Simple.
So, I mean, I get that. I mean, again, it's been a little bit since I've seen Bad Boys or even maybe Bad Boys 2. I just don't remember it being, I just don't remember anybody in those movies, any female in there being sexified up. And I don't even know if sexified is a word, but we've used it like 3 times now.
It is so. Now. It is now. You're right. In Bad Boys 2, it's probably not the case.
Well, and I don't mind that he uses that his women are so sexy in his movies because his guys are really sexy. I mean, Josh Duhamel isn't in the Transformers movies for just no reason.
Mm-hmm.
He is a good looking guy that my wife loves to watch when he's in these movies. Will Smith looked damn good in the Bad Boys movies. Marky Mark looked pretty good in Pain and Gain.
Yeah, he was Transformers. Jack. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean,
he sexes up his men just as much as he does his women. What I would want is for him to maybe put more women in his movies and maybe give them as much strength and resilience as he does his male characters. I mean, what could he do with someone like Gina Carano?
Maybe she needs more than explosions and robots to make her a good actress.
She needs some more acting lessons, but I would love to see him bring more women into his movies and make them strong. But that said, he is making the kinds of movies he wants to make. So, there you go. Now let's move on to Transformers.
Well, before you move on, I got to say, Bad Boys is a great, fun series that's trying to be entertaining. And my last statement on that is everything that these people have complained about is because it's trying to be those kind of movies. It's not trying to be anything different than that. So I just don't understand the complaints. Just don't.
Okay. Now roll that Transformers clip.
Are you Samuel James Witwicky, descendant of Archibald Witwicky?
I know your name.
Yeah?
My name is Optimus Prime. We are autonomous robotic organisms from the planet Cybertron. But you can call us Autobots for short.
Autobots.
What's crackin', little bitches?
My first lieutenant. Designation Jazz.
This looks like a cool place to kick it.
What is that? How do you learn to talk like that?
We've learned Earth's languages through the World Wide Web. My weapons specialist, Ironhide.
You feeling lucky, punk?
Easy, Ironhide.
Just kidding. I just wanted to show him my cannons.
Our medical officer, Ratchet.
The boy's pheromone level suggests he wants to mate with the female.
You already know your guardian, Bumblebee.
Bumblebee.
Check on the rep. Right? Yep, second and none.
So you're my guardian, huh?
His vocal processors were damaged in battle. I'm still working on them.
Why are you here?
We are here looking for the Allspark, and we must find it before Megatron.
All right, let's get a few of these reviews out. Garth Franklin of Dark Horizon says of Transformers 3, the result is still like being urinated upon, but at least this time Michael Bay was considerate enough not to ingest asparagus first. Julian Roman of Movie Web says of Transformers 2, the celluloid abortion should be buried in a vault and shown to film students as an example of big Hollywood at its worst. And then Cole Smithy says of Transformers 1, and he has his own website. It's a sickening force-feeding commercial frenzy to sell cars, toys, and war in the same breath that it pawns itself off as cinema. This is not cinema. This is acid Kool-Aid for children. Don't drink it. What say you guys? I mean, the Transformers, we are up to number 4. So what are your thoughts over the series as a whole? And do you think that he should maybe keep making more or move on to something new or different?
I like the series as a whole. I think I had a, this last one was, I thought was probably the best one of the four. I will give this kind of caveat where even though they are a lot of fun, and I usually come out of the movies just loving them and probably more than I should, I don't find the rewatchability of them very high, which is, I can't explain it, but I don't really find myself pulling a movie, you know, one of the Transformers movies off the shelf and, you know, rewatching it every so often. I might watch part of it if it's on cable or something, but for the most part, I just don't do that. But I mean, that being said, I just watch them for what they are. They are fun. They are a good movie, and there are some ridiculous scenes. There are some ridiculous, maybe story plot points and stuff, but it is what it is. It's like we said earlier, it's a movie about robots that is based on a toy. So it's just fun. It's just fun stuff.
You know, when you were mentioning Cole Smithy, his review said it's a force-feeding commercial frenzy to sell cars, toys, and more. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That is exactly what that series is. Now, you asked where I stood or stand. I think the Revenge of the Fallen, the second one, is an awful movie, mostly because I think the humor doesn't work and the story is more nonsensical than any Transformers story could ever be, and it is. But the other three, I like. I love the first one. I think the first one is a very, very good movie. Not just the Transformers movie. I think it's a very good movie. I think Shia LaBeouf does a great job. He creates a character we sympathize with. You know, you've got the giant bombastic moments with the robots, and their fights are fantastic. You realize something. Every kid who grew up with Transformers, they finally get to see something they played with. I mean, how many hundreds of times and watched the cartoons hundreds of times. We get to see it in real life. The first time I saw that movie, I was amazed at, I can't believe technology has come this far where I can see this now, where my childhood is finally realized. And some people are like, well, he destroyed my child. Well, you're stupid. I don't understand it. It's a fun movie. It's based on exactly what the property is, as opposed to what everybody wants the property to be, which is some deeper science fiction novelty or something. It's simply about cars that turn into robots and fight each other. That's all Transformers is supposed to be, and that's all these movies are.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when I saw the first one, you know, the level that they brought these Transformers to really is just unbelievable. You go back and watch the cartoons, and it's kind of hard to do now because they look so boxy in those cartoons. They're all just gray, you know, these square shapes moving around. But you get to this film, and all of a sudden you see all these little gears and cogs, and the wheels are, you know, still spinning after they've transformed, or belts are still moving. There's the attention to detail was just amazing. But I think that as the films went on, I think the stories got a little weaker, but their ability to show these Transformers and to make it easier to understand the fights or follow them got better and better. Absolutely. I mean, in that first film, it is a little hard sometimes to know who's on top, who's on bottom when they're rolling around in the forest, punching each other. Don't get perverted because they're all kind of gray. You know, there's flashes of color, but they're mostly kind of these gray figures. It is hard to tell who's who, but with each movie, they got better adding in color and adding in variations of design so that it became much easier to tell who was doing what. And especially with the fourth one, I don't think I ever really ever had a problem knowing which Transformer was which, you know, in any given frame. They were so distinct in their design and color. I loved it.
That's a good point. Yeah, they have really, they've really done a lot to address that. So you can understand it a lot better now.
Yeah. I mean, the stories are stupid and there's so many inconsistencies in the logic, but it doesn't matter. It is a 2.5 hour each one commercial for toys, toys that I loved when I was a child. And so maybe that predisposes me to love these movies, but I do. I mean, I really thoroughly enjoyed every, even the second one. I found, you know, big monster nuts aside, found things to enjoy with it. I just lay back like a baby and just coo and giggle every time something blows up. And if you want to use that as a point to dash my, you know, my opinions with, oh, you like Transformers, you suck, then you're free to do so. But, you know, just make sure you suck my schnuts.
Now, what about this comment? This is not cinema. Is that fair or completely ridiculous?
That's stupid.
It's bullshit. It's somebody who is wanting to create a higher minded definition of cinema than ever should be.
Mm-hmm. What I want to know what Cole Smithy is expecting from a Transformers movie. I want to know what are you expecting to get out of a Transformers movie? What, how deep do you want these fucking movies to be?
I don't want them to be deep at all. They don't need to be. I mean, if you can create them, sure, knock yourself out, but I don't need it.
I mean, should these robots walk around pontificating on life and their place in the universe? Does there need to be, you know, some kind of 2001 level of introspection of our place in the universe and, you know, the potential for our technology? Fuck no. Mm-mm. I want Decepticons fighting Autobots.
Yeah, I don't need it being directed by the Coen brothers. I don't need Bumblebee conversing with Socrates. It's the fucking Transformers.
My favorite analogy that I've heard from many critics is, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, we didn't have films had deeper this or deeper that. You know what? Because they didn't have the special effects to do shit like this. That's the only reason you didn't see dumb shit happen 50 years ago. Because they couldn't do it.
And you know what? One of the largest movies from roughly, and I'm rounding up or down, I don't even know exactly what year it came out, but The Ten Commandments is one of the most loved movies of all time. Why? Because it did something in a time when nobody else could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It showed you what it might have been like to walk through the parting of the Red Sea.
And it was fantastic for its time. Just like this is pretty fantastic for its time. This is not a deep series. I don't think Michael Bay intends for it to be a deep series. He has brought the Transformers to life, and I really don't think it could have been done much better, honestly.
Well, and when you think about some of the older, like Ben-Hur, what's the moment everybody talks about when Ben-Hur comes up?
Chariot race.
Exactly. What's the moment when Ten Commandments comes up? Parting of the Red Sea. And when they talk about Cleopatra, it's the way they represented Egypt with all of its pageantry and the parades. It was the spectacle of these films is what they always talk about. They never talk about, you know, the small performances. They always talk about those big spectacle moments. Michael Bay does it, but he gives us 2 fucking hours of spectacle as opposed to, you know, one scene in that movie. And I don't know. I don't know what more we can really say about this.
The reaction that he gets for this series is unprecedented, I think. And we've talked about it several times because that's what this episode's about. But it's unprecedented for this director to get the backlash and rejection that he gets from people and critics. Not even people. It's always hipsters because people seem to like his movies because they make a ton of money. So obviously, I know everybody's stupid, but a lot of stupid people enjoy his films. I just don't understand. Maybe it's because of his cocky attitude. Let's talk about that for a second. Do you think he's too arrogant about the fact that he just doesn't care what people think?
I think I don't think you can make his type of movies without a certain amount of arrogance. I'm fine with his arrogance. You don't see him. Hey, and let's face it. Every time you did something at work, you had hundreds of people just trying to discredit you.
Hmm.
I mean, you would be probably a little bit of a grumpy ass yourself.
But so, then you had 1,000 people throwing dollar bills at you.
Yeah.
That would make you a bit arrogant. And I don't, yeah. And like Brian's, I don't mind that. There are people who earn their arrogance. And I think he's more than earned it.
And his arrogance isn't, you don't see him, you don't really don't see or hear from him between movies, unless you are maybe more focused on the film industry, you know, than your average person. But your average person doesn't see or hear from him. So it's not like he's on Fox News or MSNBC
right.
spewing out ridiculous stuff, whatever the subject may be.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at Wikipedia before doing this, and that's the first time I learned a ton of shit about Michael Bay that I never knew.
Exactly.
You know,
and
he was adopted, raised as a Jew, you know, raised Jewish. I didn't know that shit.
So, yeah. He's just like I said, he doesn't, the only time that you really hear anything negative about him as far as his attitude is, I guess, if it comes to between him and Megan Fox or somebody bashing his movies or, you know, creating the Bay hate. And I can't blame him for being a bit of an asshole after so much of hearing about that so much. So,
and you know what I think? I find it refreshing. I really do. Because how many times on the regular show do we talk about, you know, we wish people would just be honest about what they think. And you hear mm-hmm. all these guys, they give interviews, actors, directors, and all you ever hear are positive shit nonstop. They never really
cliches.
Yeah, cliches. You hear the same rhetoric, the same talking points. When he gives an interview, and, you know, there's always some reporter during his junket that is going to ask the question, what do you think about the people that hate you? And he's just like, I don't care. Fuck them. I mean, it's basically essentially what he's saying. And I respect that because the guy gets lambasted wherever he goes, and he's built up to his cover to the point where he's just like, I'm just going to say what I think. I don't care what you think. People like my movies because they're fun, because they're entertaining. If you don't like them, stop watching them, but I don't care. As long as people are paying, I'm going to keep making them. I respect that.
Exactly.
All right. Well, as we always like to do in these Ho After Darks, we were going to have a little nerd battle. This is where I like to pit two or three entities against each other, and then we kind of see who's the winner. This one I'm going to do a little bit differently, so bear with me.
Okay.
Aliens are on their way, and their full intention is to take over the Earth. Which Michael Bay film do we beam up to them to make them afraid of us? Is it A, The Rock, B, Bad Boys 2, C, Armageddon, or D, Transformers? Which of these films would send the aliens scurrying back to their planet because they don't want to fuck with us? Which one do you guys think?
Transformers sounds like it should be the right answer, but I feel like the way that the Transformers, they kind of arrived here on Earth, it's not like, you know, they're kind of here, but we're allowing them to be here.
Okay.
Might send a wrong message.
Like we're accepting. We're too accepting. Like
we're a little bit. Yeah, exactly. We're too willing to work stuff out. So we want to, I got to say maybe Bad Boys.
Bad Boys. Because we will blow up your town.
We will blow everything up that's even remotely close to you.
We will drive a spaceship through your villages, killing everyone.
I'm going to go with Transformers because it, you know, it gives the impression. I can't imagine that they understand our language, so they won't understand that they're not from here. And maybe they'll think we actually have giant robots that can beat the shit out of them when they get here.
That's not a bad point. Yeah, if they don't know English, then for all they know,
yeah,
we
but
built
you can
them.
Look at the you can look at the pictures and get a general idea of what's going on.
Yeah, plus
maybe
Megan Fox might make
them, four.
Megan Fox might bring them quicker. They might hurry up.
She is starting to look a little inhuman with all the Botoxing and shit. For me, I'm going to go with Armageddon. I'm going to show them that we are so fucking badass, we blow up asteroids for fun.
We will fuck you up before you even get to
That's Earth. Right. We will meet you in orbit and fuck your shit up.
Even our drillers will kick your ass.
Even our fucking drillers could kill you. We send machine guns into space, motherfuckers.
We're not even sending military. So how badass do you think those guys are?
We're not going to bother our military to come get you. We're sending typical hard workers. That's it.
We're just going to send some roughnecks.
That's right. I like it.
All right. Well, very good. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode now. I hope that everyone has enjoyed it. I'm sure there are some people out there who hate Michael Bay and yet force themselves to listen to this entire discussion. I hope you still have teeth left that you haven't just gnashed them down to nubs.
I wonder if they're writing an email as like the episode goes, going, here's your point. This is why.
Oh, yeah.
This is why.
Point
this
by way. Point. Mm-hmm. But if you did, or if you'd like to send us anything else, you can find us at www.thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're at facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. You could tweet us at @H_Outsider. Our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Or you can call and leave us a message or a text at 818-81-IMAHO. That's 818-814-6246. Tell your friends, subscribe on iTunes, listen on your Stitcher radio app. Please give us a thumbs up or 5-star rating, whichever way you get the podcast, or just plain old download it through the RSS feed. As we always like to say at the end of these episodes, stay strong.